Blog Talk Radio.
Morning. Good morning, family. Good morning. Welcome to this week's episode of Radio Savage Your Dress Life. I am your host, Lee Vaughn. Give me a second. Make sure I'm right and I'm not. I gotta make sure. There we go. I can hear a hell of a lot better. Hopefully you all can hear me better now, too. Hey, this week has been a week of transition, to be honest with you. I'm leaving one opportunity and starting to pursue another one come this week, so I'm very excited about that. I took some time away to get away for a minute. I took a hot second, jumped over to Puerto Rico. As you all know, that was supposed to happen a year, maybe 2 years ago, when the big storm came through, and there was some devastation that I was trying to get through around that time, and it just didn't work out. But this go around, it did. It was a very nice trip. I thank you to the people of Puerto Rico. I thank you to everybody and everyone who made that trip a success. I thank you for traveling mercy, because my ass made it to and made it from in one piece, which is always a blessing. And here we are back on it. In the meantime, between time, there's been some work going down. I've secured a guest for the 3rd of April, big time, big person. You may not be as familiar with her as you should, but you should be familiar with her. She is a key figure in the history of our nation, especially when it comes to the educational system. So I have her coming on to talk about that and the current state of the educational system where she lives. And then there has been some movement as well on the religion show. I reached out to the rabbi just yesterday, maybe the day before, and we're going to have to pre-record that. And I'm not as disappointed as I thought I was going to be in that because of scheduling conflicts and issues, so on and so forth. And that's okay. But we're going to flip it a little differently. As you all know, we usually bring our guests on from 11:30 to noon, no later than 12:30-ish. What we're going to do on that particular day is actually launch the pre-record first. So that will open the show. And then we'll go from that to the live discussion on the back end, and we'll carry it forward. Now, I think this is going to mess around and be more than just a one-time thing to be honest with you, I've been kicking it around, and the more and more I kick it around, the more and more I see a opening and an opportunity for a full-on discussion. Again, going back to the conversation I had with my cousin, I don't know if I made this public or not, and if I didn't, then here it is for the first time. If I did, then I apologize for repeating myself. But again, he lost a family member of his just the other day, and he was saying how he bought the fact that he knew the family members about the transition to his family. And a lot of them were in denial, and their recourse was, you know, well, we're going to pray about it. It's like, no, there's nothing to pray about at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like, he gone. This is all timing. This is, the doctors have done everything they possibly could. They've said that. He waited to, he didn't have any more strength to fight. He knows that. What the hell y'all praying about? You know what I'm saying? This ain't the time to pray. This time to have your ass on a plane, come down here and see your folk to say bye and get right. But whatever. So, again, stuff like that, man, I understand there's power in prayer. I understand that if you want to doubt what's the purpose of praying, I understand all that. But when reality kicks in, the reality is still the reality. And I think we have space to address that within our generation and specifically within our community. So definitely want to and looking to have a more robust conversation with the average person, if you will, versus just the community figureheads or leaders that we'll have on from the various faces. And I got to reach back out to Bishop, see if I can lock him down and make sure that this is a go, and we'll work out the logistics. But that's moving closer and closer to being a reality. And then, of course, Sister Rashi hit me over the head the other day with a brilliant idea. We want to do that, and we'll have that for you all pretty soon. It's a lot of stuff out there, man. Like, we've been busy, you know. We haven't had a slew of guests on in a while, and that's okay. You know, if you follow the show for a while, that's the ebb and flow of the show. There's the times when every week there's somebody, and then for a couple of weeks or so, there's nobody. And then we go right back to the every week there's somebody and there's something.
Right.
And that's just
and
how it goes.
Don't forget the days when everybody's on the show at one time and we get nothing but the echo chamber. Them are my favorite, though, Libra. We get, I think one time we had like six people on the hot. We had a proper party line going. And I was
right.
Like, uh-oh, this reminds me of the old days when you get to click over to the one girl who had clicked over to the other line. And somehow they had found a way to link all them phones up to where if you just be quiet, you'll hear somebody talking real bad about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, it's a lot of work, man. You know, as I was saying, and good morning, Sister Rashi. You know, she was saying she was hitting in my ear just the other day. She was like, yo, I've been working on this person, trying to get him on the show. Like, yo, it takes some time to make sure that all this stuff is lined up and it's proper. So, you know, we appreciate you all for putting up with us and our banter in the meantime, between times, but it's coming. You know,
you can get anybody. If we wanted a person per show, all I would really have to do is take my phone and walk down to the liquor store at the corner. I could get you some content.
Right.
Applicable? Is it actionable? Does it have any type of restorative justice or self-analysis tied to it? Will it help at all? You understand, these are the messages we like to bring at Real Radio. This is what we do. So if they looking for somebody who's at the top of their Kardashian game, different radio show perhaps. If they looking how to bust down a Shifaro correctly, different radio show. If they looking at the best way But if they're looking for, like, the safest way to have gay sex, that might be our show.
That might
you
be.
You never know. But
very much so.
If you're looking for the best way to talk to your husband about your side pieces, that might be our show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for the best way to start you a new business with your side piece, that might be our show. Okay, I'll quit playing.
What about the side piece or everything?
I'm just joking. It's just a joke. It's just a joke. Just that we deal a lot, in my opinion, in personality, in personal affairs, but that's what we're dealing with. I mean, what's the point in us talking about corporate America at the top? That ain't our. That's not what's really plaguing us. Their decisions are how it manifests on our level plagues us. But the what talking about, you know, the stock exchange on this show every week does not serve our audience.
Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. However, I did just see a new stock that I got to put some money in. I was like, how many more money? Because I ain't got the big money to buy what's in it. So it's an ETF. So I ain't got the big money to put, you know, to buy everything that's in it. But if I keep putting money in that, I can get little pieces of that, and that works for me.
Hey, man, what did Kanye put his money in? Because he have all that.
You know, Yeezy just signed some kind of deal. I breezed over it. I didn't really dig into it, but I know he just came out. Is reportedly worth $6.6 billion. So he just had some kind of deal.
My brother has said he glowed up, right?
Mm-hmm. So
with Brent or nothing. He didn't do no corporate, so it had to be something stock marketish or something.
I'm reading it right now from CNN Business. The combined value of West's Yeezy sneaker partnership with Adidas and his clothing line with The Gap is worth a combined $3.2 billion to $4.7 billion. West has an additional $1.7 billion in other assets, including a major investment in his estranged wife, Kim Kardashian's Skims shapewear line. His music catalog is worth $110 million, and he holds $122 million in cash and stock, according to Bloomberg. So, yeah, he did all right for himself, you know what I'm saying?
While we were clowning his ass for acting like a clown.
Right.
We should have accidentally been calling him was eccentric because he had the money to be a clown, right? Because that's what we call white people who go crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exotic and eccentric.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now,
Kanye narrative.
I wonder if they had a prenup. I hope they did. And I was going to bleed into that when you were talking about, you know, the things that we talk about on the show. You know, I was going to say, you know, this is the show in which we talk about getting prenups as adults, because you come to the table in your 40s or 50s or, you know, hell, maybe even your mid-late 30s with someone else in the same category. Well, potentially, you both already have children. Well, what's the death in black and brown people is ugly. You don't want your kids fighting over this, that, and the third. Man, write that shit out. Legalize it. Notarize it. You know, file it. Lawyerize it. Just have it proper so you don't have those issues. There's nothing wrong with a prenup. You don't have to
get
a damn prenup.
If he did sign a prenup, that's going to cut into his finances, because a portion of his money is whatever he's getting out of her business.
Not that much, though. He doesn't have that much tied up in her business.
How much is your money and how much is money that she owes you from her business and how much is her alimony from, that sounds complicated.
But that's what you got lawyers for. That's what them ass is to figure out. I ain't got time for that. That's what they going to figure that out for. You know what I'm saying? And I'm pretty sure that they will work that out. They will work that out. But in the meantime, between that, I ain't got time to focus on that shit. I ain't got time to focus on them folks. I really don't. we have more pressing fish. We have more pressing affairs than to worry about Yeezy and Kim Kardashian. Yeah, he married Kim. Look, them Kardashians got passed.
Well, I mean,
in
the richest black man in America might get his own show now.
Who's this?
Kanye West is the richest black man.
Is he?
Okay. Check it out.
I mean, he may be. He may not be. I don't know. Again, I ain't got time for that. So, I wanted to pose this question, and I apologize for not posing it from the top, but I wanted to pose this question to the audience listening and those later. So, you all, if you listen to us later, that's fine. You can comment later. Hit us up on Twitter. We're on the gram. We're on Facebook. Just hit us up. Let us know what you think. Asian American hate. How do you feel about that? Now, depending on where you live, I would say dictates your exposure to Asian Americans and Asian American businesses. When I was down south, I didn't see a lot of Asian American businesses. You know, most of the stores down south were run by folks of quote-unquote Middle Eastern descent, not necessarily Asian American descent. Now, when you talk about your hair care products and stuff like that, that industry is mainly dominated by Asian American. They have blocked most black folks from that industry, without a doubt, even though we are the largest consumer in that industry. When you talk about food, then, you know, you always going to have your caviar here, your caviar there. But actually, when I was in Alabama, there was only, I want to say like two in Montgomery that come to mind as far as we call them here up north, Chinese joints. There are only like two that come to mind, to be real with you. And for the longest time, there was only one. There was another that opened up later, and actually the food was pretty good, so they started getting a lot more business. They started taking business from the other one, but, you know, it was still a large share to go around, so nobody was really hurting. There weren't a lot of, like, sushi spots or anything like that in Montgomery when I was there from 94 to 97. That just wasn't a big thing in Montgomery, Alabama. I wonder why. But, yeah. It just wasn't a lot of Asian Americans. Now, you know, coming back north, there were a lot of more carryouts, sushi spots, with hibachi grills and stuff like that. A whole lot more of those. But again, not so much when I was down south. Hell, even when I was in Houston, I don't recall a lot of Chinese joints. Forgive the term. Because that might sound a little bit racist now that I think about it. But shit, I don't know what else to call them, to be real. So that's what the hell I call them. Let's see. Massage parlors in Houston were huge. And, yeah, that's about it that I can recall. You know, other places I lived, pretty much on par with Houston, because once I left the north, it was pretty much just southern living, so I didn't see a lot more than that. I'll get Rodney's perspective in a half a second. I'll bring you up in a half a second, bro, about what's going on in Vegas, because, hell, now that I'm thinking about, I guess there's a different influx in Vegas, though, isn't it, though, Rodney, because you have the investors out there as far as real estate is concerned, so on and so forth, so I think there would be a lot more Asian influence in Vegas. Would it not be, Rodney? Good morning.
Good morning, brother. Good morning, Sister Rashi. We do have a growing Asian population here. As a matter of fact, there was a time when African Americans outnumbered them at least 4-1. Mm-hmm. And now it's at best 2-to-1. And Asian Americans are the fastest growing minority group here and in the country.
Mm.
Hispanics and Latin American, listen, I thought they had birthing rates above and beyond everybody else in the country.
Well, once again, that's old data. Asian Americans are the fastest growing minority group in Nevada and in this country, and it's been like that at least for a few years now. As a matter of fact, Asian Americans are on par to outnumber black people a lot sooner than most people may think, and they are becoming a much larger voting bloc. That's why you see them more prominent, especially in the Democratic Party, because they are sort of like the new gold strike of voters in America.
I posted that photograph on the page about so SI ran a cover with a curvaceous Asian American model. And the question I asked was, you know, is this timely or are they trying to chase a chick? You know, obviously looking at the recent attack in Georgia on the young ladies and the massage parlor. And we'll get into the gentleman's reasoning for that in a second. But when you look at that, our country is one, especially looking at the demographics, Rodney, we are close to not judge, but also try to correct and heal publicly for political reasons. So it's like, okay. Is this timely because it was actually time to show a woman shapely of Asian descent on our cover? Is this timely because we're trying to reach out an olive branch and extend a caring hand, a concerned hand to the community? Or is this timely because we want to get folks to believe that we are lending support, but at the end of the day, we just want to buy a damn magazine, chasing the check? So I don't know their motivation. Won't try to delve into what I think their motivation is. My concern is, why didn't this happen before? You know, we've been down this road with women, in support of women, for a very long time. Why now all of a sudden are you able to find an attractive, shapely Asian American woman? She never existed before? I'm pretty sure she did.
Well, yeah,
I've seen it quite a number.
You know where you see them now. You know what you have to type into the search bar in order to get at them now.
No, I was actually stationed in Korea, so I saw him in Japan, I saw him in Korea, I saw him in Hong Kong, so I've seen him.
The women that you would be seeing in a swimsuit edition are very similar to the kind of women you would see if you wanted to just search up, you know, scantily clad, half-nude or completely naked Asian ladies, you know, and you would just hope. I'm assuming as a man that she's got like some kind of breast augmentation or something like that, because typically the Asian woman's body is not super curvy. Typically, they have very small, almost pygmy people-like bodies. And so when you mm-hmm. find an Asian woman who's ready to kind of morph her body in order to, please some aesthetics, then, yeah, if she's ready to do all that, then, yeah, she should have been on the cover, you know. And just like mm-hmm. the trans lady should have been on the cover. The trans lady they put on in the swimsuit edition, if she is ready to change her body the way she did, in order to make herself aesthetically pleasing enough for a man or a person by Sports Illustrated to look, then a trans woman mm-hmm. indeed should have been on the cover. And a one-eyed woman, and a one-legged woman, and a burn victim woman. Whoever is ready to do the work to throw themselves into a Sports Illustrated. And I'm like, what sport? Swimming? Is that the swimming gear? What sport is it? Beachcombing? What sport is the swimsuit? What sport? Okay, never mind. Anyway,
getting men erect sport. That's about it.
About, one of the things I'm worried about, it's not, are we seeing them in our softcore porn magazines? It's not even 100% are we seeing them on the screen in our different shows that we want. My problem was when we got ready to address this issue, I looked all the way through my Facebook list, which is 500-something strong. I looked all the way through my personal call list, and it's pretty strong, too. I could not find an Asiatic person who I could talk to about this matter. This is the issue. Lee, if you want to discuss black and Asian relations, do you have an Asian person that will even condone the conversation?
I do. Unfortunately, he wasn't available this week, but I actually do. As I said to you, one of my boys is actually half black and half Asian. He's half black and Korean. His mother's Korean. His daddy was black. Obviously, stationed in Korea, and that's where he met his mama. We are close, actually. We've been friends since we were stationed in Alabama, and then we actually went to Korea together. He was up the street, I was down the street, and we've stayed in touch ever since. So we've been down since four flat tires since, I want to say about 95. And we've made a point to keep our friendship solid and alive, meaning he's in IT now. He travels a lot, but his parents still live here in Maryland. That's the other part. He's actually from Maryland. So his parents still live here in Maryland, and he'll come home and we'll link up, even though they live on the other side of the world, which is southern Maryland. We'll still make a point of linking up. And then he lives in Savannah, so when I went through from my aunt's funeral, I made a point of going to see him, and we spent a little bit of time together, caught up and stuff, and then I rode back out and went back to Atlanta. So, yeah, actually I do. Again, he was unavailable, and he wasn't able to get anybody in his circle to come, but I'm hopeful that we'll be able to circle back and make that happen hopefully next week, to get somebody on and discuss this. Because the story isn't going anywhere. This cat is coming up talking about his sex addiction, had him going off on folks and killing them like he did. Allegedly, the places of business that these ladies worked at were temptation spots for him to satisfy his sexual cravings or whatever. So he decided to take out his frustration or what have you on these young ladies
that
they at work.
It was his bad day.
According to the deputy, he was having a bad day, and he said he was having a bad day. And you know what? I had to watch that video because the verbiage sounded much more horrible than the statement was in reality. But yeah, I caught that snippet too. Like, I was like, "What?" He said, "What?" And he wasn't saying it. I'm talking about the deputy. I'll take it for the deputy in this case, the spokesperson. He wasn't saying it in defense of the young man. He was saying that the young man said he was having a very bad day, and this is what he did in order to alleviate that bad day. Now, I don't understand how. And this is the part that confuses me still, you know. And Rodney and Rashi, y'all help me out a little bit here. I don't understand how known killers have bad days, but they're still alive. They're taken into custody without incident. Known killers are taken into custody without incident. Now, lawfully owned gun owners are shot and killed in a car in front of their children. Hustlers on the street selling Lucy's and CDs and DVDs are choked to death. A young man has his neck nailed on for over 8 minutes, whom we still don't know what the hell he did. Young boys playing with toy guns are shot within 3 seconds. But see, you know, the known killers are taken into custody without incident.
I can tell you exactly what it is, Lee. Are you ready?
What is that, Rashi?
These people don't see the monster. Now, in their eyes, that the large, dark, looming suspect figure is, in fact, a monster. However, that guy that shot up the parlor, that's his confused, drug-addicted nephew. That's his neighbor who gets on his nerves when he plays his music too loud, but sometimes he asks him to come help him jack the engine up out of the trucks he restored. He knows that he's a, he's a sociopath, and he don't have him up in his house, but he knows, but that's his neighbor. He's not going to do anything, you know. He's harmless. The idea of the harmless domestic terrorist with the ever-dangerous black identity extremist is going to, it's just a facet of this country that you could do, like you could get a PhD on it, Lee. And Kamala did her work, really. She really did explain to us as best she could that we live in a terror state, but it's not from who we think it is. It's not who they're showing us. The terror is not coming from Eric Gardner. It's not coming from Phil Castile or Sterling. It's not coming from it's not coming from Oscar Grant. It's not coming from Mike Brown. It's not coming from Letitia Harlan. It's not coming from any of these people. It's coming from a little. It's a guy in his trailer. Yeah, he gets his, he's like 16, but he gets his own trailer. His parents are so sick of his shit that they allow him to live in the trailer because it just stops him. It gets them off their backs, you know. It's about, it's in the back of their house. It's fine. It's fine. This guy that we need to be afraid of, he's not afraid to buy the rope, the tape, the hook, the shovel. He'll buy it all at one time. He'll buy the lie and all that at one time. He can. He can because they say, oh, what you doing, putting in a pool? He's not taking a hostage. He's not holding a family hostage. He's putting in a new koi pond, right? With the same materials, it's the benefit of assumption, in my opinion. The benefit of the assumption, and it's not privilege, because privilege would be like we're not going to arrest them at all. But the fact that they don't morph into monsters that have to be annihilated, that idea, that right there, Lee, is the difference between what happened to Dylan Roof, okay, and what happened to Chris Darner. Christopher Darner, the cop, the rogue cop. No cheeseburger for the black robe cop.
Rodney, I don't, help me understand.
Yes, sir.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Help me understand. Am I missing something? Is there something different between this, you know, obviously the actual killings versus those who haven't hurt anybody as of yet? But outside of that, is there something that I'm missing that causes the police to behave one way with this group, but a totally different way with that group? The group that has been known to harm people, known to maim, kill, cause death to people, but they are cuffed and brought into custody. The other group, no one's hurt, no one's harmed, but they are plotted 6 foot under. See, so I don't understand this. This is confusing to me. I'm not a smart man. I know stretch of the imagination. But to me, the sense of, notice I didn't say comments to me. The sense of it all is that if your duty is to serve and protect, if your duty is to prevent additional harm, then you would go in hot for the people whom have caused harm. You would not go in hot for the people whom have hurt no one, you see. That, in my head, would be the sensible thing. Help me understand, brother. You know, I'm lost in this room by myself. I don't know how to get out. I need some help.
Well, let's see if we can shed some light on your path out of that dark room, brother. I mean, we have to look at this realistically. And so I want to go back to a few things that you all said. And, Lee, you talked about your one Asian friend and that one Asian friend seemed to come about from your military service and your one Asian friend that came about through your military service. You're part of the 1% of this country that joins the military. So without, it's not saying that you wouldn't have had Asian friends had you not gone in the military, but the probability of you having an Asian friend had you not gone in the military would have been pretty high. So you as a black person, having an Asian friend is already the exception. And that exception became about because you did another exceptional thing, and that was join the military. Most black people do not have Asian friends. Most. Most black people don't even know.
Say why now. Don't say it like it. Make sure you put it, the onus, into the right place. Because black folks love them some Asiatic art. They love anime and manga. They love Chinese food and kung fu. All that idea that America has sold us of what it means to be Asiatic, we love it. But there is no love in the Asiatic community for the Africans. In any of this, Ronnie, speak on why we ain't got no bonds like that. Ronnie, truly, please speak on why the bonds don't exist.
Well, actually, Sister Rashi, that is not really correct, per se. And I've noticed the discussions about this Asian hate issue are not based on facts. And to your point, Lee, the reason why you're in that dark room is because of white supremacy.
Trying to get out.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Asian hate. But the reason why there is Asian hate is not because there is black hate. It is because of white supremacy and white hate towards everyone who does not meet their definition of white or who they have not yet given their white card to. That is it. Asian Americans are known as the model minority. So because they're known as the model minority, then police don't have the same fear of them as they may have of Mexicans, who are far from the model minority, and black people, who are the furthest from being liked by white supremacists. So, and here's something that folks also are not understanding. This is not new with violence towards Asian Americans.
No, it's not.
Like,
not
at all. Similarly to black people, Asian Americans have been persecuted and oppressed. That's right, oppressed, ever since they've been in this country. It happens all the time.
And even with the opium wars and whatnot, they was oppressed in their country.
Well, all right, since you brought it up, why was there ever an opium war? It was also white supremacy. There was an opium war, so-called war, because it wasn't really a war. It was an opium oppression of Asian people by the English and others. Basically, they were pre-cracked to how there was the opium problem in Asia, was brought about by Europeans, perpetuated by Europeans. And then once they got them hooked and strung out, just like they did in black communities later on with crack, and before that with heroin, then they kind of pointed the finger at him and ridiculed him and talked about, look how those addicts behave and conduct themselves. Because they behave and conduct themselves that way, they need us to keep them in line and to keep them in check. Otherwise, it might spill over, and I'm speaking as a white supremacist, into white. So the oppression has been a huge problem in this country forever. One of the first major racist laws in this country was against Asians. Actually, black people were free to live amongst white people where they were free. Asian Americans or Asians, they were the ones who had, remember, the Chinese Exclusion Act? They weren't even allowed to come into the country. And this is back in, I want to say, 1875. Somebody check my numbers. And one of the largest hangings that ever happened in this country, of course, you know, it's always black people who are getting hung, but there were other people getting hung too. Heck, Irish.
1882.
Okay, 18. Look at that. That prevented Asian people from coming into this country. And that was after they were building what became the lifeline of this country, the railroad. It wasn't just Asians building the railroad. It was also Asian and black people. Asians and black people have worked together and lived together in this country, and contrary to modern beliefs, have actually helped one another through their oppression. That's right. Asian Americans did that with black people. So the narrative that black people have today of Asian Americans is one steeped in the white supremacy that they have been fed attending white supremacy madrasas, because they have not been given the true history. One of the reasons why we haven't gotten the true history is because white supremacists didn't want these two minority groups that were being oppressed by them to continue to join forces, because then that would make it more difficult. So like most things, it's always easier to throw out red meat and just enough for one, so that both of them will go after and fight against each other instead of turning their attention to the one that's oppressing them, which is really the white person. California saw one of the largest, if not one of the largest, hangings in this country, and that was towards Asian Americans. You know, there's an old notion that we know about what happened to black people in Watts. But do you know what happened to Chinese people, well, Asian people in California? No, because it's not talked about. We don't talk about their hanging. We don't talk about their oppression. We don't talk about how we still oppress them to this very day. So black people, heck, Japanese people had a love for jazz around the turn of the 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their association.
Japanese people
today, yeah, there are some racist Asians, or at least there's people who have bought into the notion that white supremacists have taught them about black people. There's no doubt about that. But I'd say put yourself in some of their shoes, though, because the images that are shown of black people, and we can break this down by the numbers if you want, is of black people as pimps, hoes, drug addicts, thugs, because looking, it used to be the image of a thug was a black person, right? That's the image that's been projected of black people throughout the world. And so when new Asians, and that's what I say, new Asians, young people, or people of the modern era are fed the programming. Programming is of the violent, aggressive, loud, thuggish black person. Of course, when they come to this country new, not all Asians, but when they come to this country new, if they've had a steady diet of the white supremacy programming, it is actually natural for them to have some fear of black people. I'm not saying it's right, but white supremacy affects people not just in this country, not just black and white people, but it affects all people, and the programming reaches across the ocean. And for those Asians who are here that don't have direct connections with black people, don't know the history, they go to the same white supremacy madrasas and learn all the greatness of white people and the lack of by everybody else.
I think that, you know, not only do we not know as much of the history as we could, or even if you want to say should, know about Asian Americans in America, the Americas, because remember, there are a lot of Asian Americans who, well, Asian Americans, I'm sorry, there, scratch that, Asians in the Northern Hemisphere. There are a lot of Asians who also went on to the Caribbean as well to work in the fields and the plantations in the Caribbean as well. There are a lot of Asian Caribbean mixtures. I know off top five black folks whose grandparents or great grandparents were straight up Asian, straight from Japan and or China. But if you looked at them, you would never ever think that that was the case, because they look straight up African in their features, but their direct grandfather and or great grandfather was or grandmother was Asian. So yes, but this constant pitting against the lesser thans is an effective mechanism for white supremacy to project its dominance over us all, to be honest with you. And that is even inclusive, in my opinion, of the lower class white folks as well. Not giving them a pass, just saying, they're also included in that. But Tom, in this moment where any of us are being mistreated or treated less than because of our racial identity, is it in fact beneficial or necessary for us all to rally together and push back, or do we leave one another to our individual fights because of self-protection? You know, I think that in our past, as a nation, we've done that. We've left one another out hanging because we thought the big bad wolf, white supremacy, was not going to knock on our door. In this moment, I think we're all seeing that big bad wolf is indiscriminatory, and it doesn't matter who or what you are. It's coming. It's coming for you out of a sense of, I would say, protection, actually, for it, because, you know, put yourself in the shoes of a white person. That may be hard for some of us to do, but you got to see that the world is changing and you're losing your grip. You know, so as a defense mechanism, maybe you're going on the offense of just starting wars with anybody and everybody just to keep everybody confused so they leave you the hell alone. I mean, really, like, starting wars with anybody and everybody or pitting others against one another so that they leave you the hell alone, give you an opportunity to regroup and strengthen your numbers. But I read an article the other day stating that, in general, young people aren't having enough children to maintain the world's balance.
That's
a different
that's
joke.
A good thing. That's a good thing, right? We're not supposed to be breeding like this, right? This is a good thing.
Not
at we'll be tipping at eight and a half billion, right? How many humans?
Seven plus.
I thought we had hit the eight.
Well,
I know we're gonna
seven,
be
eight, whatever.
Eight by the time we come out the underside of this pandoramba, they call it. Or we
you
down
think
it's
gonna be a whole lot of
it?
I don't think so because I don't think people are screwing like that. I think people, like, you know, you might got the corona, man, as you say, Rashi. You might got the corona, man. I ain't trying to see you like that. Hey, look, I tell you, as a man out here trying to date, it's tough. You know what I'm saying? Like, I need to see your negative corona test before God.
I want us to be, you said corona, and I think that is an excellent segue. Yes, Mr. Rodney, this country does have a disturbing a history of Asiatic discrimination, and you didn't even mention Japanese internment. You went so far back, you brought it all the way and sat it in their lap. But what one of the things I think is fueling this frustration with that community to where the less hinged of them are feeling like they want to take axe and arms against them is that everybody feels like this is the conspiracy theorists have flamed the fires of corona being a targeted, you know, international threat that China waged on the globe in order to dwindle global numbers. You know, they could take the loss, but Caucasians can't take no 10, 20, 30 billion people lost. That's a major loss for Caucasian communities, all right?
Yeah.
So when you start telling white Americans who have bought into white pathology, I don't call it supremacy, I call it white pathology. If they buy into white pathologic ideology, they call it, then, yeah. I mean, no, not yeah, go get them, but yeah, I understand why they need a new campaign in order to ask them to stop hurting them people, because they, in their heart, think that there has been a wave of Chinese people who came to this country with this virus with the explicit purpose to kill as many Americans as possible. And it's successful because you can't change American behavior very easily. It's hard to make us put our clothes on and stop smoking, and stop shooting each other. You know, it's hard to make us stop doing drugs, and it's hard to make us change in this country. And so they knew that the behavior that could spread that type of spread real quickly, because, you know, it has that kind of host, that it would be devastating to this nation. And when they look around and see grandma dead, grandpa dead, Auntie Jane is dead, and they can't even get to the bank to get the prorate, they just mad. And who they going to shoot? Each other? No. They want to shoot the people who they think. Now, he's going to tell you, the coach, the new guy who just did the killing, a fresh kill guy, he's going to tell you that he was sexually this and bad day that. But if his ideology is set in white pathology, Mr. Rodney, he just saw a room full of others. He saw a room full of others, people, and their job was to touch. And honestly, who would pass COVID? A room, you know, who would? I mean, I ain't even trying to just, please hear me, I'm not justifying this. It's wrong. But there's always method behind madness.
Roger, let me tell you something. I done had what I truly believe has been some sunshine pussy in my life. I mean, some shit that I thought if I threw up in the air, it would straight turn to sunshine. But ain't no pussy ever made me want to go out and kill nobody. So this dude with his sexual whatever, I don't get it. I don't understand it.
This is what I'm trying to do for you. This is what I'm trying to do for you.
Again, it's like I don't know if I shared this.
I'm trying to bring methodology to you.
I'm with you. I went to a comedy show, and there was a fight at the comedy show. And the comedian said, who comes to a comedy show to fight? It's the same. Who thinks about sex and wants to kill somebody? Who does that? Sex is supposed to calm you down. It's supposed to relax you. It's supposed to send you into a euphoric feeling of not, I want to just go out and kill three people.
Well, first of all, right, a massage parlor, especially if you don't have your happy ending money, it will frustrate you. Okay? If you're a young white boy and you done went and got touched up and she done coughed two times on you, and then you didn't have your happy ending money, you might, and then you fell sick a couple of weeks later. He was like, I don't feel good. You think about that time you got coughed on at the massage parlor, and you were still mad because she didn't give you the happy. You a regular. She could have happy ending you. That's all right. Oh, yeah, I know when y'all shift come on. I know when everybody's going to be there. One thing that concerns me is that he didn't just kill Asian people. It was some non-Asians there.
Well, indiscriminatory killing is come on.
Like,
I mean,
but he killed so many that they went on ahead and learned everybody was in there. But that's not how that works. And the way he killed them, he had been up in there before. They wasn't sitting all in the parlor like it was a French bordello.
Right.
What I'm saying is we think we're dealing with an unhinged gentleman frustrated because he didn't get his last 5 minutes. I'm telling you, we're dealing with a system of people who are small acronym, I call it, the death of a thousand cut behavior. Instead of a whole trade building falling, or whatever Timothy McVeigh did, Now they going, it's going to be a parlor here, an old lady there, two teenage black boys there, a group of some weird, you know, others over here. And now it is just okay to hurt other people because they understand. Oh, they're just in a frenzy. The nation's just in a frenzy over this new, elections, the shift in power. We're having shift in power issues.
Well, I mean, that's obvious, and thank you for that segue. That's obvious from all of the legislation that's going through state houses right now. They're trying to ram through to curb the vote. You know, not only in Georgia, but in Texas and Tennessee and every place else that was predominantly a red state. They're trying to roll back voter registration measures, early voting measures, absentee voting measures. I mean, this shit is just out of hand. But again, whenever you lose, you look at the reasons that you lose and you try to affect those reasons. And you know, so as we all know, souls to the polls is huge in the black community. You know, this is when the churches get together and they take their congregants out on Sunday. Instead of having church, they usually go and early vote. Well, Georgia tried to pass a law that you can no longer hand food and drink, water or anything else, to people standing in line. Who does that hurt? Think about it. If congregations are taking their congregants out to vote, a lot of those folks are elderly. If they're forced to stand in line to vote, because, you know, the vote usually happens during the summer months, right? If they're waiting in line to vote, hot, early registration, early voting, long lines, who's going to need food and water or any other kind of liquid? Elderly people more so than anybody. More so than anybody. I mean, everybody is, depending on how long, damn line long is, how long the line is, but elderly people more so than anybody else, right? Now you can't make a Chick-fil-A run and come on. Look, not endorsing Chick-fil-A, but I'm sandwiches. But, you know, you can't make a Chick-fil-A run and, you know, you can't make an In-N-Out run and, you know, you can't make a Mickey D's run to bring back some food. Folks, you know, hell, we've been out here for 4 or 5 hours, 2 or 3 hours, whatever. You know? So, but sore losers make decisions that affect us all so that they can stay in power. And that's it. All these folks care about is staying in power. Nothing more, nothing less. They don't want to expand the right to vote. They don't want to create a bigger tent to invite more people in to vote. They don't want to make it easier to vote. They want to make it as tough as possible for your ass to vote so that they can stay in power. Because they understand the trend of our nation. The trend of our nation is quick, fast, lazy. Young folks want everything now. They want it fast, and they don't want to work for it. So if you make their asses work, they understand that that will repel them from putting in that work. And as long as they don't put in that work, you have a better chance of winning. You do. There's nothing.
I can't imagine anything more
extremely scientific about it.
And making somebody want to go into action, like being told they can't or shouldn't do something. Historically, telling any other blank American, no, you can't. That don't do nothing but make us say, oh, we can't. All right, hold up, mm-hmm. my beer. You know what I'm saying? We are a hold my beer. We are a hold my beer nation. And so I want us to focus on,
I disagree with
really,
that.
Is our relationships, like you said earlier, to each other. When people put up posters saying stop Asian hate, they're not talking to everybody. Mm-hmm. When we scream out Black Lives Matter, we are talking to certain people. Some people we're not talking to. They already know. When the message pisses you off, they're not talking to you. I mean, when the message pisses you off, that's who they talking to. If you can look at it and be like, "Yep, that's true. These people's lives matter," then you're not the person. What I want us to worry about is why we don't know any of these people and why they are so comfortable creating a subculture society within a society where we don't readily know any of them. If you don't have a Asian food, thing where you go, you really into authentic Asian food, so you frequent a restaurant where you know the guy. His name is, Lee Lee or whatever. And you, over time, foster a relationship with Lee Lee and the customers to come to Lee Lee's restaurant who may, in fact, be Asian. Then you don't, where do you, they're not intertwined in our society enough for us to get to know them. When, if you work next to somebody who's Asian, they're not talking to you all day about Asian stuff and their relation. No, they talk maybe about work, and then they work. They're not there to be your friend. They figured it out. We're not here to entertain you. We're not here to be your friend. Only here recently have Asians said, "Listen, we have entertainers, and we would like you to let them entertain you." But the Chinese ideology and the Japanese, that Asian identity, it's not up for entertainment. It's serious business, and they perpetuate it in marriage. They perpetuate it in their law. They perpetuate it in how they raise their children. They tell them, "Please don't come home. Please don't come home with don't even bring them here to come over. Don't ask other children to have sleepovers. If they're not your cousin, they're not coming." Mm-hmm. And you can't go to their house. I don't care how friendly you would have been with your homeboy from Korea as a teenage boy, I don't think his mama would have want him at your house.
Well, his daddy was black, so this is different.
But in military, right?
Right.
So subject to not being there sometime, right?
Correct.
Which means that her what she's asking for in the household is will be de facto. Yeah.
I get your point. Yeah. But
what I'm saying is these people have resigned, not these people in a race and sense, but Asiatic people have resigned themselves to keep their culture closed unto themselves. And rightfully so, because if you ask a Chinese person who the last 10 emperors of China were, he might be able to tell you. But if you ask us the name of five current African presidents, we can't tell you.
Good point.
The actual
preservation
of your culture, the preservation of culture is what I think we're witnessing. And so they're saying to us, let us be by ourselves. Don't come picking on us. Y'all fight amongst yourselves, and don't keep looking at us. I don't care how many people you think we have killed with our China virus, as our ex-president insisted on calling it, which I think is the root. Well, not the root, but definitely one of the branches of this tree that we're barking up,
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the entertainment value, I'll get to that first, and then I'll get to the preservation of their culture on the other side. The entertainment value. There's actually a movie coming out, or if it hasn't come out already, it came out already. It's called Boogie, and it's about a Asian American basketball player. Now, the NBA has done a outstanding job of reaching out to Europe, Africa, to Asia, and hell, pretty much globally, to get to get players. You know, Yao Ming, obviously. The kid that played for the Knicks. What was his name? Jin? I want to say it. I'll think of it. It'll come to me.
All I can ever think of is Dikembe Mutombo. That's the only name that ever wrote it.
Really? But he's African. So, but Yao Ming was the big, tall Asian dude. And I think he's from China, I want to say. And
he was from China.
Yeah, he's not dead. There was a kid that played for the Knicks. He was Asian as well. And he balled for about a season, and everybody was Lin, that's it, Jeremy Lin, there you go. He balled for a season or two, and everybody caught that Lin mania. And, so there have been a couple here, there have been a couple there. And, you know, I'm pretty sure there are many more to come, and that's what's up. Because, you know, a lot of American players, if they can't make it in the league, they'll go overseas. And China has been a huge destination for them, and they broke some people off very well to go over there to play basketball. Basketball is catching on big time over in Asia, big time. You know, it used to be baseball. You know, Asians were all about baseball. But basketball is quickly burning up that ladder. And I would not be surprised to see some folks come out to play football in the near future, because the NFL also has been very much interested in going after international players. So I would not be surprised to see that either. But the other side of that, the preservation of the culture. And you said something that really caught my attention. You said they express it in the way they marry. You know, we've touched on that multiple times on the show. You know, love is not blind. It's not. It can be, but it's not. If you exercise it in a manner that in a manner that is for the protection of your society, you cannot allow it to be blind. It's much like your educational choices. You know, letting your kids decide what major they're going to take in school is dang near suicide. Like, how'd that work? You need to be this, you need to be that. And other cultures do that. Other cultures tell that you are going to be this, you're going to be that. There's because we need you in the community. This is a deficit in the community. We need a mechanical engineer in the community. You're going to be the mechanical engineer. We need a dentist in the community. You're going to be the dentist. We need a podiatrist. You're going to be we need an OBGYN. You're going to be that. We need a whatever. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be that. But that's how you preserve your identity and your society here in America. Because if not, it will melt away, as you see with us specifically. Who are we? You know, Rodney, you hit on that as you work toward the Black Leadership Summit, right? Who are we? What do we want? Who is we? How do we define ourselves as being a part of the we? Because we are so far, we are so all over the place. We are. You know, and defining who we are is very important. Because until we do that, how can we take our grievances forward and say, this is what we want or we need? Okay, well, who are we? This is who we are. Okay, well, how many of we are there? This is how many of us there are.
Right. I love what you just asked, Rodney. As Rodney said, Rodney asked, when we tackle the idea of an Asian, what do we have? What depictions because we have to all admit that most of what we have, even if you have gone to those other nations, Lee, they're still what they let you see or what some mm-hmm. other person has created for you to see, okay? So when I think of Asians, I always think, because my first real interaction in the culture was with Kung Fu movies, Mr. Rodney, and I was an avid black belt theater watcher, and I thought it was just fantastic what Asian people could do with their bodies. And I know this is going to sound racist, but I was like, I thought it was like some of their homework. I thought every Asian person knew karate. I thought they all knew that it was a part of their family theory to learn how to defend yourself. And so I loved that. I was like, dang, I wish we had, you know, like the Black Panthers would have, you have women have self-defense on a Saturday morning. I wish we would have, you know, have like classes where you trained our children to, you know, to make sure that they could, like Shaolin monk, be limber and yoga and all that good stuff. I thought it was amazing. When I delved further into my teenage years, so that was my first scene of what I was allowed to see was Asian people kicking each other's ass mostly, because Kung Fu movies are a little violent. So it was Asian people, as much as I loved it, they could have seen it as Asian people beating each other up for the entertainment of others. As I grew up, I started getting into erotica, which is porn's more sophisticated older sister, right? And when you read porn, when you read erotica, they push to you the allure of the geisha, the allure of the quiet, demure country Asian girl, definitely a virgin. Nobody has ever touched her. And how she gets just pulled into the city life by someone who sees her interview. So they give you the allure of purity. You never really get a debauched Asian woman just straight out the gate. They make sure you know that there was some force, military men coming to take her innocence. Very seldom do they even talk about the cousins and the older, you know, people who would be able to do things to her, right? Further on down the line, I start seeing the influence of anime on our people. My little brother, and I'm going to say it starts with, teenage, it starts with what we love. That Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff, that was Asian. A lot of the cartoons that we thought were American, they were not. At the end, you could see all these like Chinese guys' names and credits rolling at the end. And that was the beginning of the anime invasion in our brains, where they were able to give us Chinese and Asian and Japanese ideology without even for real putting their particular face on there. Like, here, have a sip of this right here. But you still don't get into their houses. You don't get for real until, like, the Joy of Love Club and movies like that, dramas later on that still mostly deal with Asian perspective from the female side. Asian women tend to be more open to share about what their life has been like in that culture, but if they want to share, because it's oppressive, they got to shut the hell up. They don't care if he's in the Yaku's eye. They don't care if he's a quack doctor that do the underground prescriptions. They don't care if he's Yao Ming. You got to shut up because he ain't at home. You don't get to complain. You don't get to be unhappy with your status once you are taken off of the open unmarried female list. And that's something in the culture. To be bound in marriage means something to a woman. If you can't get a man to be with you, that's something. Because they'll put you with your cousin. If you can't get a free man out there in the world to get you, they'll hit you with your second or third cousin on down the line.
They didn't join a convent over the affair. I'm sorry, I was watching Wyatt Earp the other day, Tombstone. One of the greatest movies.
You know why? I want to talk to Rodney. Hold on, because he talked about them being the largest, the growing population in this country. And I think it has something to do with the restrictions in their country. If you look at what's happening in Asiatic countries, and every time I talk about them, I'll be feeling like a low-key racist, but I know I don't have the power, so I guess I should relax. But if you look at what is happening in China, you can't do but one. They still have an intact one-child rule, you know. So if you want to be able to breed happily without having to go to the abortion clinic every time you made a mistake, then you have to abide by the rules of China. Then if you look at Japan, all they breeding is scared because of the nuclear fallout with the two-headed babies and the babies without eyes and the babies without ears. They will not share the pictures of them babies that the women are having. And that's why their population is dwindling in that country. They don't want to breed and have them, you know, have the fallout. Now you look at India and what's happening with the overcrowding there. They also don't have a rule, but if you give birth to a girl child, they try to kill them little girls. When you look at how the Asian woman is able to breed, when she is not under the restrictions of her mother country, yeah, you're going to get some record numbers. You're going to get some breeding out of control because there's no law in America stopping a Chinese patriot from having an unlimited amount of children. We don't care. She had them here in America, so they American. They're going to be taxed and worked as Americans.
Well, Sister Rossi, I do want to jump in and say a few things because you did mention a whole bunch of stuff. And so the reason why I put in the chat was break down who we're talking about when we say Asian, because by name, you have only mentioned, we in the discussion have only mentioned the stereotyped few Asians. And it wasn't until almost your last sentence that you broadened out the Asian diaspora, and which is huge. Also, I want to go back to the whole Kung Fu thing that we associate with Asians, and I understand it. But let's keep in mind that all the images of the guy who brought the training to the Shaolin Temple is of a dark-skinned man. So let's put that in the right perspective. And that same dark-skinned man happened to be the same one that stopped in India after he took a trip to Egypt. And on the walls of Egypt, you see something that is typically identified as Egyptian temple boxing. Egyptian temple boxing was an export from Egypt to China, to the Shaolin Temple. So I just wanted to talk about the miseducation through oftentimes the programming that we feed on, that was fed to us, and that we consume. That's what they talk about, is how much media do you consume? How much television do you consume? And what you consume, you know, what you eat is what you become, right? So I just want to make sure that we put these things in perspective, because let's put the, you know, history is important. And sometimes we carry, we continue the misrepresentations of the white supremacist history. And we have to stop doing that. Also, when we talk about Asians, as we talked about in this discussion, which is normal, we only talk about maybe four or five groups at best. Number one usually is Chinese, followed very closely by Japanese. And we may mix some Koreans in on occasion, especially people who've been in the military. And recently, we've thrown in people from India. That tends to be, and even that is a broad sense, what the last part that I just mentioned, that tends to be our identity of Asians. And that simply is shorting Asians by a lot. Because, yes, Indians from the country of India are Asians. The reason why Christopher Columbus called people Indians here is because they was dark like people who were Indians in the country of India. So he thought he was an Indian because they're dark people. They have become lighter people because of the virus of white supremacy. White, if you look at this world, this earth, white people were used ships as vectors of white supremacy and infected the entire planet. They tried not to leave one country unwhitened. Even Chinese people were not as light as they are today. They were darker people. They've been whitenized. So
did you say whitenized?
The groups that we typically whitenized. So we have the people that we typically associate. But but what about all of the other Afghani? They're Asian. Pakistanis, they're Asian.
That's right.
As a matter of fact,
Cambodians, the Vietnam. Come on, shout them out. See, that's that Asian love right there. Shout them out, Red. The Vietnamese, I like them.
So they're all Asian. The Laotians, the Lao, they're Asian.
Yeah.
Right. All of these various groups of people
the
are Tiernami. Asian. Many
are the Tiernami Asians.
All the mini stands, those are Asian people. Russia has a large population of Asians that they oppress. Technically, Russia is in Asia, but because Russians tend to be more white, they have been through politics called European.
Russia is
but
Asia.
Their country physically is not located in Europe. It's in Asia. Turkey,
Russia
those are
Asian.
Persian, those are Asian. So why are
we ain't in a
all,
fight
all
with
of these
the Middle East?
People are coming here.
We in a fight with Asia.
Well, we're not. Black people are not in a fight by any means. That fight is white people and white supremacists. And let's not own
what I meant to say.
That
you know
fight
what I'm
of white people. But what I'm, you know, when we think of Asians, because of the miseducation that we all receive, when we talk about Asians, we tend to be talking about a very small group of, when in reality, like African people, Asian people are a very diverse group. So to keep referring to them by continent, and a lot of the people that we refer to as Asians are not even on the Asian continent, because Pacific Island people, they're physically not from Asia, but we lump them in as Asian. We say that Asians only came here at a certain point. Well, we know that Asians were here before white people were here. Asians explored the coast of California long before this country was supposedly discovered.
That's right.
We have to educate ourselves, because education on facts and on true history is the best protector from white supremacy. The lack of education, miseducation, and disinformation leads to a lot of misunderstanding and allow white supremacists to continually put one group against another. So we're focused on fighting each other for the scraps and not focusing on them who are walking out the back door, well, really the front door, with all of the wealth, whether they're taking it out of Africa, whether they're taking it out of the many countries that make up Asia, I mean, look what they did to the Hawaiian people. Do we forget the oppression of Hawaiians? I mean, after all, we took their whole country, their whole island, and called it ours. It wasn't like they were voluntarily giving it to us, right? The Mormons went there.
Right.
And
if we want to do something about Asian hate, we could do something about Guam, right? We could finally stop playing with Guam.
And so the Philippines, we call them Asians, and the Filipinos are, unfortunately for them, so dark that they're often confused as black people, treated as black people. That hanging, the lynchings that I was talking about in California, was the lynching of Filipino people. And guess what? They were lynching them for the same things they lynched black people for. And that was the fear of white women cavorting with Filipino men. Well, the biggest threat to white people in their eyes has come from it is white men being fearful that their white women are going to be with other groups of people. And, of course, the darker you are, the greater the fear as well as the threat of white supremacy from white men. I remember Birth of a Nation, the movie that was shown in the White House by the president at the time, Woodrow Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That was about the white, think how they use the phraseology, right? This was about the white knight rising up to protect the white damsels in distress from being ravaged by those black men who wanted to assault and rape them. That's what that movie was about. That's why romanticized the Ku Klux Klan and helped them rise up again was because of the fear of white men that their white women would have sex with black men. The race massacre in Wilmington, North Carolina was simply because a black newspaper publisher said that, hey, we're not trying to be with white women. They're actually trying to give it to us. So it was the same thing with the lynchings in California. And, yes, let's talk about – I was going to bring it up to speed, but you hit it earlier, Rashi. Let's not forget the oppression of putting people in concentration camps in America. In America. It wasn't the first concentration camps that America had, and it definitely wasn't the last. But that was Asian Americans broken down into Japanese Americans who were put in concentration camps on American soil in multiple states, who were victimized and brutalized, had their land taken, no differently than later on the Germans taking land, property, and commerce from Jewish people. As a matter of fact, many historians say that Hitler learned a lot of his tactics from watching the Americans oppress black people and a few others. So our white supremacy white supremacy has infected the whole world, and then America rising to be a superpower has exported it as if it was on steroids and dominated the rest of the world and has caused some very horrendous things here in America and away. So what I would like for black people to do is first learn history, right? And then when you see a person being oppressed, don't say, well, that person didn't help me enough, because more than likely, historically, they've already helped you. And they still help you to this day. You may not see it because most black people simply don't have that much of an association with Asian people. Or if they do, they don't even know they're Asian because they look dark like them and they make assumptions that they might be black, but black as in the historic definition of black, but they're actually Asian. So it is critically important that oppressed people band together, coalesce with one another, because it's more of us than it is of them. And if when we stop playing oppression Olympics, well, we got to press more than you, or we got oppressed differently than you.
Historically,
we know who was oppressed. Advance ourselves by coming together to fight oppression wherever it is. Remember the poem from the Jewish oppression by the Germans by Pastor Molinar that talked about first they came for the trade unionists and no one spoke for them, and it goes on. Yeah, so when we see somebody oppressed, we need to support them, period.
Okay. Fair enough, fair enough. But you spoke to something about white and eyes and the fear that all of the white women were going to go after the black men. Well, the Kardashians just proved that that was the truth. And they continue to. But
I agree, Mr. Rodney. Stomp down oppression, right? But you didn't really talk to when that oppression is coming from the people who were. It's like asking the mama who hit you to tell your daddy to stop hitting her. I don't know if we ever really talked about how it feels in these corner stores, in these Chinese hair Asian hair markets, in these places where we interact with them with our black dollars. How it feels to be followed, how it feels to be accused of stealing, how it feels to have subpar food sold to me just because, you know, I'll eat it. I'll have to if you're the closest restaurant to me. How it feels to be sold subpar makes clothing because, you know, you'll just be back in 30 days with your welfare check to buy another cheaply made shirt. It does not feel good to be the foundation of somebody's economic oppression. And until the Asian community, the Indian, the Cambodian, the Korean at the nail shop, the Indian at the restaurant, the Chinese at the all of these people, even how the Japanese anime creators refuse to cast and create a black character of any worth that a young teen can be proud of since he in there looking at all that. Until they are ready to see where they are perpetuating that hate on others, should they even be ready to ask for others to help them get this, as my friend Sarah Susan Seti says, to get the beast off his back? Do they have the right to ask for the beast to be removed when they are, in fact, part of the machine?
So the thing about oppression is the formerly oppressed who gets a molecule of freedom oftentimes becomes the new oppressor because the ultimate oppressor leads them down that path and oftentimes put them in a position to do it. So I think that, again, that's why I said that the history part of this is hugely important. We have to understand how did they morph from being true allies of black people in every sense, to now being seen as these bad people. And there are. I've been in the stores. I know if I go into a Muslim store, they tend to treat me the same way. Asian people, the ones that you identified, have been put into this position in modern times, not always. And that's why I keep mentioning the white supremacy piece of this, is if we just focus on right now, then we hate everybody because everybody seems to hate us. But we have to look at the history of it and realize that they were led through white supremacy to act as some of them, because it's not all of them. Because, we have these two groups, black people and Asians, actually have very little interpersonal relationships with one another. And what we do have is very limited today. It's more in commerce than in socialization, social activity. And so we don't really know each other. We've lost sight of our shared history and culture, which allows, just like Russians use the various grievances of black and white people to try to steal the election and to create greater division in this country. White people do the same thing with the various minority groups to keep us at odds with one another. And so what I say is, no, let's not accept these false teachings from white people because it only propagates their narrative from their point of view of this people against that people. And as long as they're fighting each other, again, they're the ones who are walking out the front door with the largest bags of gold. So know the history, respect the history, respect the culture, reach out to them. And I'm going to say this to black people because somebody mentioned this last night in a discussion about this. They said, oh, well, now black people are going to go and help somebody else instead of helping themselves. Well, this is not an either or. This is a all hands on deck type of thing. Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Afghanistan, Pakistan, all of these various groups that are here that are getting an advantage. The advantage that they're given oftentimes is to prevent black people from rising up. Now, they don't know why they're getting it. They just know that they're getting it, and then they take advantage of it. Every group of people who come to this country know that if they want to advance economically in this country, go to black communities and set up shop because black people tend to have the least. So it becomes opportunity for them. That's capitalism. Capitalism equates to racism. Capitalism is racism. And capitalism is oftentimes what separates all of us. So instead of looking at the differences and looking at the right now, we should be looking at the commonality. Oh, wow, you do Chinese boxing. Hey, well, I know Egyptian temple boxing. Or what about Ghana stick fighting or headbutting? Those are all martial arts, too, that we don't accept. How about Kai Lai and Eskrima from the Philippines? That's a stick fighting martial arts. The Balisong or butterfly knives, that's part of a martial art. That's so it's just so much bigger, and we try to bring it down to us against them when the only them is white people. And it should be us, everybody else. And the way that we get beyond some of these divisions is getting to know one another, truly getting to know one another. How many Asian friends do you really have? How well do we actually know Asian culture besides the food and martial arts? Probably, I'm guessing most people. I know you guys are world tours, right? So you are the exception, but you're not the rule. So let us minority, who are actually the majority, be who we are instead of who the white supremacists tell us that we are, so that we can keep pointing fingers at the other and oftentimes play oppression Olympics with one another's struggles. White people have caused us all to struggle, and then they pitted us against one another. The best thing we could do is say, no, we're not doing that. And, yes, you went and attacked these massage parlors. Oh, and by the way, that captain that you talked about, Lee, at the very beginning of the show, the reason why what he said sounded so odd to you was because it was odd. The dude actually used to sell T-shirts with anti-Asian rhetoric on it. As a matter of fact, some people wondered, did he even have one of the shirts on when he said the guy had a bad day? Because he is against Asians himself. That's why they removed him from being the speaker, and the police department put out an apology letter because they had somebody who was selling anti-Asian T-shirts being their spokesperson, being the face of their department, who is a racist against Asian people.
I want us to move on because we have about 15 minutes left in the show. And hopefully, again, we'll get some actual guests on to discuss this even further. But I need to check on Uncle Joe.
Lee, I got somebody for you. He just couldn't come on today, but he said he would come on at another day.
That's perfect. That's perfect. We got to check on Uncle Joe. Is he okay? Did anybody text him? Did y'all call him? Rashi, did you call him? He's falling up the steps.
Uncle JB?
He looked like he hurt. Yeah, he looked like he hurt. He in a bad shape. He in a bad way. Anybody call
what
him?
What happened
sure
to my
good.
Uncle? He just let us have our money. What happened?
Well, you know, he's falling up the steps going on Air Force One twice. And it didn't look good. It was not a good look at all. Not at
well,
all. I don't.
We knew. Come on, we knew.
Yeah.
Now all we got to do, they all do. This is, we're not hearing about Kamala right now. She's getting all her briefings. They're letting her know, you know, they're giving her more information than she used to get. And she's going to have to start, you know, making some of the choices. I think
knew. He called her the president.
They knew. Huh?
He referred to her as President Kamala Harris. President Harris the other
I'm
day.
I'm telling you, he knew. When he used to blink, only one of his eyes would go down. That's when I was like, he's got broken baby doll syndrome. I call it broken baby doll. And to me, that's the precursor to a neurological issue that most people don't get better from. I mean, you can tighten them up. And some people would say that it's a Botox issue because they had tightened the shit out of Joe. At one point, I'm thinking Joe must have looked like a Shar Pei because they had pulled his face back so tight like that. But he has had a stroke or something because he's got broken baby doll eye. And, yeah, let's get ready for Kamala, President Kamala, and Vice President, who's next? Is it the speaker comes up, or what happens with that, Rodney? What happens when you, when
speak
the top guy, what happened when they kicked, what's it called out, when it was Johnson? Is the speaker of the House?
Nancy Pelosi is third in line.
Right.
Oh, boy.
You got the president, vice president, then the speaker.
You
think it's going to happen, Rodney?
So this is what I have to say about that. I think people forget that early in President Biden's life, the man had brain surgery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, of course, there's going to be something remnants of that. He's lived 70-some-odd years, and about 40-some of those years have been post-surgery. So what you're seeing is actually not new in Joe. This is just Joe post-surgery.
Did you hear Rodney call him Sleepy Joe? I heard Rodney call him Sleepy Joe.
No, I think we heard President. We heard X-45 call him Sleepy Joe, and he implanted seeds that are exploding in our psyche right now when we see stuff. It's also called poisoning the well, so that when something happens, we associate it with what we were initially told, and then that becomes the dominant thought process that pops up in our mind. I have met President Biden. I met him when he was running for office to be president, and I also met him as vice president and got to spend some time with him. Cognitively, I could not discern that there's anything wrong with him other than he, and I would say for a man his age, he is actually exceptionally sharp, as most of those politicians are. But, yes, he knows he is of a certain age. You can go back to many presidents when there were video of them getting on Air Force One. And
right.
You will
and
see
fall.
Them stumble up or
right.
down.
Right, you can make a montage.
No,
you really could.
Yeah, you could.
And let's not talk about X-45. He didn't even have stairs. He couldn't even walk down a ramp. He had to basically have General almost hold his hand and walk him down the ramp
back.
As if he was. So I don't want to I don't want to sort of pick and poke too much fun.
You're right,
at
though,
it,
Rodney.
But
we've been gaslit. We've been gaslit. We have to hear that. We can't let the dude that was on his way out mad about the situation. We can't be thinking we got pertinent information about Joe Biden from Donald Trump. Even if it was true, it wouldn't have been told to us in a usable, actionable way. So we might as well just assume that we've been gaslit and to come at this situation new and to accept that we in just a new place, better than where we were, but just still a new place where the potential for us to transition into greatness, which is being a nation led by a woman.
Well, the transition
that's
coming.
That's greatness because, hold on, that's greatness because we're a nation being led by a woman? That's greatness?
I believe that, Nate, if you look at a history of great nations, and definitely current great nations, and how equitable living amongst the citizens, you will find strong female at the top of the
I just wanted clarity on that one. Go ahead, Rodney. I'm sorry.
But
you
know this about me. You've always known that I believe that women are inherently, you know, smarter and a little bit better at handling conflict, you know, when they don't have feelings involved.
Whenever that
okay.
is. I would say that, again, we come up with false equivalencies to elevate one over the other, which is also white supremacy because in Africa, you know, you had male rulers, you had female rulers, whoever was, even though there was some cultural bias, no doubt, but whoever was capable of doing the job is the one who did the job. We know some of the greatest warriors in Africa were women. As a matter of fact, Adora Melaje and Black Panther mimic, take on the characteristics of some of those women. When we speak of Amazonians, the first Amazons actually were Africans, not from South America. So there is greatness in women, and there's a quote, I think it's from McLeod Bethune, that says, I'm paraphrased, that we have indebtedness to God for creating the next best thing to him, which is the woman. So I big ups to the sisters out there. It's Women's History Month. Big ups to all women because, after all, without you all, y'all the ones who gave all of us life, right? So that puts you on a level all by yourself.
Well, whatever. I'm not going to test that one. I'm not testing that one right now. I'm going to leave that one.
Thank you, Mr. Rodney. Thank you, because I struggle, you know. I struggle with trying to understand the mission is, and it's not necessarily to show yourself in the eye, in the perspective, or as Toni Morrison say, in the male gaze. It's the little, in fact, it's a show that I'd like to talk about, you know, in the future, about the little things that can be done that bring about change, bring about liberation, bring about, you know, the release of struggle as much as can be. And it's the work of the woman, you know, in my opinion, the work of the woman is liberation work, feeding children in the morning, making sure their brains are ready for knowledge, making sure that knowledge doesn't hurt them in the long run, you know, making sure you have a mate that doesn't hurt the baby and doesn't hurt you in front of the baby, things like that. That small little work that seems simple, like everybody's doing it, but it's hard work when you put it under the struggle context, under the Black liberation context, and I'm down for it. I mean, not the mate part, but the work, a lot of the little work, I'm down for it.
Sister Rossi, the strongest power on the planet, other than any deity, however people identify their deity, the strongest force on the planet is Black people working together, and that's a historical fact. Black people have saved the world multiple times, another historical fact. Black people have saved this country multiple times. Another historical fact. Black people will be the ones that ultimately save this country again, as white people are going out about the business of trying to destroy it. But notice I said black people. It is not, again, this is a white supremacy mindset. It is not one versus the other or one or the other. It is black people. It is the black woman and the black man working together collectively, hand in hand. That is our true strength. No matter how many black women graduate from college, and they graduating at a higher rate than almost anybody else, it has not changed the plight of black people. It has not. The data, the numbers have not changed. It is when black and slaves knew this, even when they weren't allowed to be married, they knew that when the black man and the black woman came together, they were stronger together. The black man saw the black woman take abuse and vice versa, and they didn't hold that against one another. That's a modern thing. They realized the predicament that they were in, that they had no control over their bodies and anything else, and they accepted that in each other, and then they reared up children that ultimately became us. So it is the black man and the black woman working together, as it is men and women working together. But when we're talking about us, it's black men and black women working together. That is the most powerful force we can ever be. Anything under that is less than reaching our potential. And when it comes to the situation with Asian Americans, sisters and brothers, reach out to Asian Americans like you would want them to reach out to us. That has been the strength of black people in the history of this country. We didn't take on the traits of white people and hold grudges against others. We looked for what did we have in common, and we embraced it, and we accepted one another. That is what breaks down the barriers and walls erected by white supremacy, not by emulating white supremacy.
You got to get rid of that either or and get to the we. Sister asked me earlier, I posted something about zodiac signs and the introvertedness of the Virgo. You know, Rodney and I have shared this multiple times, how introverted we are. People always say that we're not or whatever. And sister said, well, how do we work together as equal signs? And I said to her, I was like, yo, you know, it's not about the we, it's not about the you or the me, it's about the we. And we both have to come out and work in a manner in which the other one recognizes to satisfy both our wants and our needs. It can't be just you, it can't be just me, it has to be us together. And there's no greater strength in that, as Rodney just echoed, you know. We can't do this without one another. You know, somebody's working a board, someone's doing the messages, someone's posting this and posting that. One person doing this, it doesn't work. It can, but it's hard as hell. You know, people hit me over the head, as I'm sure they do you, Rodney, as I'm sure they do Rashi. Like, how do you do that? I want to do that. What do you need to do? The first thing I come out of my mouth is, it's a lot of work. I'm not trying to deter you, but I'm trying to tell you, it's a lot of work. You know, you trying to go at this thing by yourself for an extended period of time, you may be in over your head, dog, to be real. You know, you need an engineer. You need somebody that's going to help you out, because even automation can't do everything. It takes two. Life is so much better with two or more. We have to get back to understanding the beauty in that. There is actual, true beauty in that. There's rest in that. There's opportunities for gaining a greater perspective and seeing things differently, and then being able to actualize things. And that's love. That's the essence of love. And on that note, I will say love you all. Thank you all for listening live or later. Thank you for your time, as always. I'm back. I'm happy. You all take care. Until next week.